It's kind of one of those things, it's like the duck. You know, you see a duck in the water, right? The duck looks like it's cool, but the duck's freaking working hard under the water. Wow, I'm working hard, working hard. That's how our place is. We look cool, but we're working hard.
I think this is a tangent too, but just kind of here talking to a few people on social, as a few of us are dealing with some mental health issues, kind of some, depressions, people feeling down in the dumps. All the misinformation within our space of physical therapy and the misinformation across the board of handling COVID, seeing some of our dear friends promote said videos and debate and argue about the legitimacy of these videos, it feels like we need a lot more comedy and a lot more satire. This is my comedian, wannabe comedian brain. Whenever, Move You came out, was that a couple weeks ago, and they dropped a quote on their comment thread, the exhaust quote, right? I know Derek saw because he mentioned, he referenced it a bunch. Josh Germ, do y'all remember seeing this quote? It was something to the effect of like, how did it go?
It was something to the effect of, if you're not leading the pack, you're sucking on exhaust.
Yeah.
This is part of the problem is, like, and even to take it back. So Chuck Klosterman in the Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs book, his opening chapter is about, he's like, John Cusack, through all the movies he did in the late 80s, early 90s, portrayed such an unobtainable goal of what love should be that every man is going to fall short of that from here on out. And he's like, so, you know, the woman now, they look at Lloyd from Say Anything holding the jukebox out in the front yard. And if any one of us did that, we'd end up in handcuffs.
Yeah.
And like, I kind of blame the next iteration of that. I blame where we're at now on Real World, because right around like the late 90s, early 2000s is when we really started rewarding stupidity and volume over substance.
Yeah.
And I feel like that has really taken off now to where you see even the fact that there's a phrase for Insta famous, but these people that are like, do jack things in my soul, I want to believe that they know what they're saying is wrong. And like, I can almost get on board with it more from a straight, like, you're an ethical asshole, than from being that much of an idiot. Like, if you know what you're saying is just getting out there, getting it for likes, and you're doing it for the money, for some reason to me, that's not as bad as someone who's really bought this hook, line, and sinker and standing up from the pulpit saying, if you can't do a scapular wall angel, you know, your back is going to explode, or whatever dumb stuff is coming out this week. And then you look at it and like, there are these entities to where you can almost see them like baiting people getting fired up.
Yeah.
And it's like that kid in middle school that like didn't know when to shut up and was doing it for attention, except now we give them attention. And occasionally, like, you'll see, and I've stopped engaging with these people just because nothing positive comes out. Like, no, never in the history of ever is going on one of their comment sections and trying to have a rational debate, anything good is going to come out of it. And I think, to your point, out of this whole thing, like, we need to keep talking to each other. And it kind of goes back to that whole community thing. Like, you know, I'm never going to convince someone that doesn't like me of anything, or it's like the likelihood of it happening. But like starting to really, and then Germ, for you, like getting in the academic side, you get them when they're young. So like being able to get there kind of the ground level before they've been exposed to some of this stuff. Like I went to the Level Up Happy Hour thing on last Friday, and we got into small groups, and this kid wanted to go into sports therapy. And, you know, I'm the only person there that's a practicing clinician and been out for a while. And let's face it, I'm a little salty in general. And the kid's like, I have this plan. I've already joined this mentorship with this group, and I won't name the group because they're but like, he was so excited about it. And I'm like, oh man, like, but I get it, because this group probably has 70,000-80,000 followers. And like, it's one of those things, like, and I kind of love the Sturgill Simpson reference a moment ago, although it's kind of like gotten defeated in the past 10 years. Cause I used to say that like a lot of physical therapy is like the music you hear on the radio. It's all objectively awful. And if you want to find some better stuff, you got to dig a little bit deeper. And it's kind of the same thing with what we see on the social media realm, to where like odds are, if someone has like this really pretty thing, they're paying someone to sponsor them. They have a graphic designer, and they probably haven't read a paper in 3 years. And it just, if it's easily accessible, odds are there's not a lot of depth to it.
I don't know if it was a conversation I've had with one of you guys, or I may have had it with somebody else, but like, there was an old adage that everybody has an opinion. It doesn't mean it's any good. You know, there's this point where like, you need this refinement process of like talking to people who may know a little bit more than you, or at least have a different perspective, and making sure that like stuff jives. I think we had talked in the chat before that like the Kardashian index and like this, you know, inverse relationship between like a social media imprint and like relative intelligence. And there's something that's got to be said for that. Like, just because like it gets a lot of likes, that's one thing, but like, how much intrinsic value does it really give? You know, what is this really trying to say?
Well, you know, we promote all this critical thinking, and like, so we say trust the experts, and then the next step is, well, a lot of experts are flawed, and well, trust science, and then, well, here's all these flaws with this paper. And I see how all it does is kind of just branch people into their own little corner further and further. And it's hard to think through all of those layers. Like, by the time you get to the yes, no, you've hit 75 maybes. And like, I saw one the other day that was like, well, we don't have 100% effective vaccine for influenza. How do we expect to have something effective for COVID? I'm like, well, first, you don't understand virology or statistics. And we got to get through those problems before we can get to the second part of your argument. And, you know, I don't have time to explain to my cousin in Tennessee how there's two proteins on the outside of influenza, an H and an N, and the variance of those proteins with upwards of 15 different versions at this point of each contributes to how they decide what goes in the influenza vaccine. And, you know, you're just looking at it like, oh, damn it, Verna. Like, I can't do this right now.
A lot. That's a lot to have. That's a big conversation to have with your cousin out there in Tennessee. Over a 10-minute catch-up family call.
Yeah.
Those are great points. And part of me wonders to what extent we keep seeing this just favoritism towards any dichotomy, you know, not just in our realm of the PT world, but like you said, whether it's COVID or flu vaccines, you know, food, music, like everything's got to be dichotomous these days. How do we start combating that? Because Brandolini's law is real, right? You know, it takes way more effort to refute bullshit than it does to actually make bullshit. But I don't know. I think, Jared, I think you touched on something. I think just due to the zeitgeist of the times now, maybe we start combating it more with satire and comedy. I don't know.
Was it Chappelle or Chris Rock that has the whole bit where he talks about like how a lot of comedy is like, comedians are inherently like depressed people. They've just found the only outlet they really have is to talk openly about how crazy this world we live in is.
Yeah.
It's Chris Rock.
Yeah. And like that whole bit, like the first time I heard him do that, I was like, oh man, like what you're saying is funny, but like that's got some weight to it.
Yeah. And by nature, well, this is my bias. Like all good comedy should have some weight to it, right? Like if my favorites are Carlin and Chappelle and Pryor and those guys, one of my favorite Chris Rock lines is that good comedy always punches up, you never punch down. And Josh and I talked about this a lot. And so, yeah, if we're truly going to be healthcare practitioners, scientists that speak truth to power, we got to keep punching up, whether that's punching up at MoveU or the president. Yeah, I just compared MoveU to the fucking president. That's right.
You know, I was trying to figure out if you consider that punching up.
Yeah, not punching up, but as punching up in the sense of their influence, of their, you know, that, you know, that side, as opposed to punching, you know, down on people that be oppressed or what have you. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a powerful weapon, whether you're Jonathan Swift back in the day, shout out to my English literature class, talking about using satire to talk about the struggles of Ireland, or us today talking about Doctors Without Borders, or what was that, Frontline Doctors, whatever Breitbart video that was.
Yeah. The alien DNA.
Yeah, the alien DNA and demon semen.
Oh yeah.
Hashtag demon semen. That's my that's my next mixtape. Go cop that demon semen, son. But yeah, I think satire is a powerful weapon that we could, that I enjoy to use, that I like using. I think people tend to resonate with that. You know, hence the Daily Show and Colbert Report and all that stuff. But
it's funny because even with, like, you know, I've done plenty of long form, heavily cited arguments on why manual therapy is crap. And then the second I start like taking a brisket and sticking some unicorn toothpicks in it, everyone's like, oh, that makes sense. Like, yeah. Yeah, it does.
Yeah. It's that aspect of storytelling that's that much, it's easy to digest. It's like, I don't have to go read this long paper. I can just watch Derek do a satire cooking show. Like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Why am I pushing on somebody? Why do I think I'm moving somebody's vertebrae when I do a manual therapy technique? It goes back to, I guess, the lowest common denominator, or how do you make a piece of content so easily digestible for the masses to understand? And for some people, that's, hey, your high-waisted pants are turning off your abs. For others, is there a positive way to do that? That I think we can find. I think there is a way to do that. We just have to get a little bit more creative. But then again, that's work, right? That you have to have, that's time and commitment to put out your message to the public, and maybe you want a graphic designer or whatever. I'm getting to the point where I'm like, fuck all that. I just want to put some raw satire videos and just make fun of people and make fun of the people in power. But that's me. I enjoy comedy and satire, so I'll try and keep using that as a weapon, because another quote I like is where's that quote of this guitar kills fascists or whatever? Have y'all heard that?
No. Is that Tom Morello and
from Rage?
Rage Against the Machine?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a Tom Morello. I mean, you've seen that quote about Tom where he said something political and they were like, hey, look, this guy who plays a guitar over here talking politics. He's like, one does not need a master's in political theory from Harvard University to tell you you're full of shit. But as it happens, I have a master's in political theory.
Yes.
From Harvard University. It's like the greatest burn of all time.
Yes. That was the best.
So beautiful.
This machine kills fascists. Woody Guthrie?
Woody Guthrie, yeah.
Guthrie. He plays a sticker on that guitar in the 1940s. So something that, whether that's something we have in the therapy, I don't know what sticker we could put on a therapy, like a treatment table.
This machine does
barbecue
kill
kills bullshit.
Barbecue.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go.
That's my rant.
I don't know, for people like myself that don't quite find myself quite as funny, I think the one thing that I think is a common theme with like satire and humor is like there's a bit of honesty that people can approach. So like being genuine, regardless of whether it's through satire or just like having that interpersonal relationship and like that connection, people can tell when you're being real, and people can usually feel like when you're selling a bullshit. Like, there's, I think there has to be a level of some genuineness, or else there's not much progress or things to be had in the first place.
You know, now, once again, though, we're back to talking about that whole, like, being a part of community and building relationships side of things. And, like, I think that can't be overstated out of it. Like, once again, like, it's Saturday, we're on a Zoom call with each other talking about work stuff. Like, it, you know, just having the willingness to go, like, hop on that instead of watching TV or doing whatever mind-numbing thing that we all end up doing. So, but there's something that I think, Jared, you mentioned that it's worth fleshing out a little bit more, because, you know, I think a lot of therapists in general, but especially during this, have struggled with a lot of mental health stuff. And, you know, I think we see this whole thing about imposter syndrome and a lot of us not really feeling like we're good enough at what we do. And, like, you know, the more research you read, the more insignificant you realize you are. But the interesting thing, and I was talking with Will Butler about this the other day, just because, you know, both of us have our own mental stuff we have to work through. And it's so funny because a lot of times, you know, it is those people that tend to struggle a lot with their own mental health that I feel are some of the best therapists, because you're almost better at talking through someone else's problems because you struggle so much to face your own.
Like a good comedian. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is that whole, like, yeah, like, I know exactly what I need to do in order to get out of my own headspace because I'm telling you that. However, the difference between us having this conversation and me doing it myself is like the gap across the Grand Canyon.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%. It's almost like why we have, it's like why you have coaches. You know, all of us have some sort of background in strength training to a certain degree and probably could program for ourselves decently well. But I know for myself, I hate doing the thinking of actually like setting up what the big plan is and like being patient with myself through the process. Like, I have a coach to kind of refine the process and come back to center and, you know, remind myself what this process is really about.
Yeah.
100%. I just think it's funny, like, the whole, like, coach less. Like, I had that whole interaction with a girl who lost her shit because this 14-year-old girl had a butt wink during a squat, and a coach didn't immediately correct it. And you're like, you don't need to sit here and, like, give dissertations on every rep. And on top of that, like, I don't know the other coach's relationship with that athlete. Like, Lord knows, I've had some days squatting where if I videoed every set and put it up online, you'd be like, damn, that dude works for a company called Barbell Medicine. And, like, you're going to have those days.
Yeah.
It's not my athlete to have that conversation with.
Yep.
Like, I mean, one of my favorite cues or comments to an athlete is like, well, how was that? My favorite cue is, did I say anything? Like, if I didn't say anything, it was fine.
Hell yeah.
I remember you doing that to a few of some of the UF athletes that we had while I was there. And the first time he said it to one of the guys, I think he was either one of the baseball players or like it's another field sport, but he just looked at you with the biggest confused look, like, wait, what? It's like, you didn't say anything, like, you're fine. Continue on.
Yeah. And it's that other, I don't know what this is, train of thought or that ego to, as a therapist or as a coach that I've seen, or my perception is people, they feel like they have to say something. They have to cue some movement fault in order for them to feel like a good therapist, or they're doing their job, or for them to think like the patient's having buy-in, or they're being viewed as an expert, which I think is tough for some people to get over. But yeah, like, you don't have to give them a dissertation, or you don't have to tell them that they should move their foot a centimeter out. Like, it's okay for somebody to just go through exercise and you as the PT can just be in the room watching them and leading them through the journey of motor control and motor learning. And it's okay to not be talking during every rep.
I just want to grab one of those PTs that does that occasionally and like hang a dartboard on the wall.
Yeah.
And then be like, okay, you're going to hit the bullseye. I'm going to coach you through it. And then just like start screaming every fucking cue at them under the sun. Oh my God, you have too much wrist flexion. No, you really need to focus on full elbow extension as you go.
Yeah.
And you just threw that last one in a posterior pelvic tilt.
I didn't like the way.
Do we need to get you some lighter darts?
You know, let's do a few reps with lighter darts, but let's go to the table. I'm going to do some MOBs on you.
We'll
do
MOBs. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll do a test retest and then we'll see.
And then bring those high waisted pants up too. That'll keep you out of that posterior tilt as well. And yes, you'll be set.
It's beautiful. Beautiful metaphor. Shit.
I'm curious just because I feel like all of us have some experience in youth sports. Do y'all find the tendency for hypervigilance or expected overcoaching to be more prevalent in the middle and high school athlete as opposed to any other age population?
What's funny about that question? So my dream study, if I ever go to a PhD, is to do a multi-high school study of injury rates, just to see what the patterns are, because I think we're looking at it wrong when we're looking at like youth sports in general and football. Well, no, let's look at how each different high school has different clusters of injuries, because ideally you would probably have an N of about 60 there. So if you see a bunch of ACLs at one school, a bunch of hamstring strains at another school, a bunch of ankle injuries at another school, like it's not about the like what happens as a result of football. It's about the training programs these athletes are going through. And, you know, I'm assuming everyone of us played high school sports. Like, and you certainly even see at the pro level, there's a culture there within teams. And you see the schools that, like, they come out and they're like, this is my job. I'm here to do work. Those are normally the ones that, like, San Antonio spur people, and they just walk through the other team. And the more that you start getting this, like, over anxious side of things, like that never really works well.
It seems like it could be like over hypervigilance, not only from like the school, but also the parents too. I mean, I'm sure you all have seen helicopter parents that if they don't see results like yesterday or their expectations aren't being met, like let alone any other process is going to happen.
But I think that's one of the hardest things as a new coach. You have this propensity, and I'm going to use coach here synonymous with therapist, this propensity to do things that cause quick changes. But like almost everything that benefits you initially doesn't have long-term benefit. And I'm sure if I really thought through that, like I could find some counterexamples to it, but like, you know, if just take it across the board, I can feel really good for the next 6 hours if I keep pounding beers. But tomorrow is not going to work out very well for me. Well, I can do some things to make you jump higher in the short term if we start doing these drills. But if you lack the overall athletic foundation to where you really need to be doing that, is that the facet of your training I should be focusing on right now? Like, yeah, I want you to jump higher, but like you need like 6 steps in order to get there. Like I'll never forget when I think I was in elementary school when this happened. Like I was pretty good at math growing up, and this girl came in, she's like, I learned calculus, and her dad had written out an integral in the solution, and she wrote out the solution to it. Like, you don't know calculus, you know to write out the thing that your dad told you to write on the opposite end of it. And like there's a much broader foundation to that, and I think that analogy holds a lot in sport. It's like, well, cool, you can do this one crazy little variable, but like you're not athletic. Like how many basketball players do we have that aren't athletes, or how many baseball players do we have that aren't athletes? Like, and by like, if we're going to hierarchy this, like you should be an athlete before you ever get to identify as one subset of an athletic group.
So prerequisites. And we should, maybe we should have that for PT and healthcare professionals too. You should have some semblance of critical thinking skills or know how some science works, which I guess we try to do that with having a bachelor's degree and having all these supposed prerequisites before you get to grad school. But it seems like that falls kind of apart too.
I think you also need to be able to talk to people too.
Yeah.
Talk to people. You're in a real up creek.
But this is that whole like general specialist conversation that always comes up. And I do think there is a lot of utility in working in different settings and getting that perspective out of it. But like, I'm telling you, I really think with the way healthcare is going, I would love to see some type of apprenticeship program to where like you start out and you're going to go to ortho school and you start out and you're a CNA after the first year. You do another year or two, you become an ortho nurse. You do another year, you're a PT. You do another year, you're a PA. You do another 2 years, you're a non-op doc. And then, you know, just because like, one, I think it would solve a lot of the relationship problems we have with this superiority complex between different groups. Because, you know, if you wipe somebody's ass before, odds are you're not going to fault the CRNA for how they approach their job. And instead, it's this like skipping steps and how like you don't get to appreciate what went on to get you to where you are.
Yep.
I think I've got to run. I'm getting called upstairs by my wife.
Well, so. Derek, thank you so much for kicking it with us, man, and hanging.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's go.
I'm like a lot of the world's problems today.
Yeah. I'm like fired
dude,
up.
We got all kinds of shit solved today. We've got community engagement available for everybody with briskets and barbells.
That's right.
What else do we solve today?
How to combat misinformation.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of that.
Yeah.
And then generalist to specialist kind of mentality with like not only sports, but also just in education too. Figure out that hierarchy.
Mm.
And satire solves everything. That's pretty much what it is.
That's what I believe.